Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. My guests for today are Paresh Patel and Ed Pettit, co-founders of InnoGrid, a cost-effective and equitable plan to build Houston's first microgrid. With rising temperatures and an increase in devastating storms, it's time to rethink the grid. And that's exactly what InnoGrid is focused on. The company, a member of the ION's Smart and Resilient Cities Accelerator, is looking to grow partnerships and awareness for their technology in order to enable more energy security within the local community. Ed, Paresh, thank you so much for joining me today.
We're happy to be with you. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you for having us, Natalie.
So I'm very excited to talk to you about InnoGrid. I've covered y'all in the past and what you're doing here in Houston, but for the listener's purpose, tell me the origin story of InnoGrid. You know, where did this idea come from and how did you and your co-founders connect?
So this is Ed. I was invited to take part in the Houston Climathon in 2020, hosted by Impact Hub Houston through a friend of mine, the late Dakota Stormer. And he was one of the rising stars in Houston's clean energy field before he unfortunately passed away at a very young age of 27 from lung cancer and bone cancer. But, you know, getting invited to that climathon, you know, really set me on a path to look at energy justice and how that interplays with the climate. And a group of us that were at the climathon just naturally coalesced around the idea of a microgrid. And this is also where I first met Paresh.
Yeah, for me, this idea actually first took hold as an inaugural member at Greentown Labs Houston. Jason Atier there and I were having some discussions on why not put up solar PVs on the building top at Greentown Labs. And moreover, why, as the largest clean tech, climate tech incubator in North America, do you not have a plan to source, you know, the energy from renewable or clean sources, right? And so that discussion for me evolved into some other engagements with RMC. And then I thought, you know, why not we take this kind of concept across this entire innovation district? So with that in mind, I actually was participating at the Climathon as well, but not on the InnoGrid team. I was on a separate team, another team. And it was only during the presentations that I learned about InnoGrid and what they had conceptualized. And I said, look, I've got a similar concept in mind. I think it makes a whole lot of sense for us to join up. And so that's how I became engaged with the InnoGrid team. For me, I think the microgrids model and concept really took root looking at the base of the pyramid in developing countries, right? So, you know, my focus is on energy poverty, energy access in developing countries. And as I saw the microgrid model enabling a lot of hundreds of millions of people actually leapfrog legacy top-down centralized energy infrastructure, I thought if they can deploy microgrids at the base of the pyramid in developing countries like India, Sub-Saharan Africa, why not consider having this at the top of the pyramid? And so that's just kind of also some of the background of my thinking on needing to address energy access and resiliency as we now see is becoming urgently needed.
I should add that unlike Paresh, I didn't have a background in energy issues. My background was in public health and urban planning. I'm actually a PhD student in urban planning and environmental policy at Texas Southern University. And especially I'm interested in environmental justice issues. I'm working with the Bullard Center currently, the Bullard Center for Environmental and Climate Justice. And, you know, energy justice is a sub-component of environmental justice. And when I saw the team was developing this microgrid during the hackathon, I said, well, why don't we try to incorporate an equity component to it and focus the microgrid on serving a low to middle income neighborhood like Third Ward, which is just adjacent to the Innovation District. And since the Innovation District in 2020 was still in its early stages of development, the team thought it was a good idea to kind of use the grid to connect the anchor institutions, and the municipal organizations of the Innovation District with the adjacent low-income communities in Third Ward. And I think since then, we've realized that this model could work in many other parts of Houston. Houston, as you know, is a multinodal city. We have the Texas Medical Center. We have the Galleria area. They're redeveloping the East River project along Buffalo Bayou. And each of those major developments have low to middle income communities adjacent to them. So why can't we, the energy capital of the world, design a system that uses the anchor institutions and the generation capacity that we have through renewables to offset the energy for these households experiencing energy poverty? And so that's kind of where the Intergrid model has evolved.
Yeah, let's talk about, before we get into any more details, talk a little bit about microgrid technology. You know, what's the current status of microgrids? Are there markets where this is already successful? Is that what we're modeling this after? And why Houston specifically, as you've touched on, is a prime opportunity to develop this technology?
Yeah, great question. You know, microgrids have been around for a very long time, as you may already know. I think we're primed here in Houston, in Texas, to really see microgrids go mainstream. I think the recent disasters, outages, have really awoken homeowners to the benefits of home microgrids, right? I think people want to see that they have greater control, that they are in charge, if you will, of their own power, or power to the people, as we say at Intergrid. But I think there's a great priority placed on resiliency, sustainability, and microgrids and distributed energy resources are really empowering consumers to do just that. How they produce their power, how they consume it, and even how they can share or sell it. You know, we live in this shared economy, and I think when you consider our current grid system, it is a vestige of the Industrial Revolution. You know, it's 140 years old. And that business model is ripe for innovation. You know, BCG says that over the past 50 years, the average business model lifespan has really fallen from like 15 years to now about 5 years. So, you know, if we consider the force and frequency of freezes and fires, heat waves and hurricanes that are growing increasingly, you know, across our region as well as the U.S. and now we see in Europe and Asia as well. I think we have to rethink how we deliver power, how we produce it, and how we consume it. And I think microgrids will really play, I think, a transformative role there. So if you look at kind of the market potential, microgrids will hit about $40 billion in annual investment by 2028. So, you know, they are no longer niche. I think we're beginning to see a lot of these deployments, especially in California because of the wildfires there. You're seeing it on the East Coast, you know, post Sandy and some of the other hurricanes. And now we're beginning to kind of wake up to it, if you will, here in Houston, the energy gap of the world. I'd say we've been kind of a bit of a laggard there. So we need to, I think, accelerate the deployment of the microgrid models. I don't think we can really afford to truly upgrade our grid system. It'll cost about $2 trillion. We've got millions of miles of wires across a patchwork of state, you know, regulations where the federal government has no control over. And even just recently, Brad Jones, the interim CEO at ERCOT, answered kind of this question for us. You know, he says the answer for the future is to get more generation. So the question now becomes, how do you create more generation? And again, I think that takes us to an approach that is going to be increasingly decentralized, digitalized, decarbonized, and democratized. The four Ds, as I say, which means smart microgrids. So that's kind of, I think, where we are, you know, giving greater control to consumers. But I think microgrids, when they're deployed in a grid plus way or grid tied, they can also provide a lot more grid resiliency, reliability. They can help secure the grid. And we'll get into that a bit later in the conversation.
I would add that, you know, this the microgrids are still a new concept here in the US. We've had a history of microgrids being used at university campuses, some medical campuses. They're very common on military bases, but we haven't seen a wide adoption of microgrids that are community-wide in our cities. One of the first ones actually just broke ground this year and started testing, which is the Bronzeville microgrid in the Bronzeville neighborhood of South Chicago. And it's really one of the first community microgrids to go online. It successfully completed an islanding test where it islanded off of the larger utility grid earlier this year in April. And it's serving a low to middle income community of Bronzeville, one of the environmental justice communities. And so we can see a kind of a link between what's happening in Bronzeville, Chicago, and inner city neighborhoods here in Houston, like Third Ward. One of the interesting things that they also did this year in Bronzeville as part of the microgrid is they launched solar installations on 660 residential units in the Dearborn Homes public housing community. And here in Houston, just this year, a couple of months ago, we started a planning process for CUNY Homes, which is the largest and oldest public housing complex in Houston, located in Third Ward. And so what a great opportunity that could be to launch our own community microgrid and involve some generation capacity and weatherization and energy efficiency measures for our public housing that's being redeveloped at CUNY Homes. So we're looking at other cities, whether it's Chicago or Boston, and looking at how they've deployed their microgrids and making sure that we're bringing those best practices to Houston. And eventually we want to be the leader now in developing these microgrid best practices as the energy transition capital of the world.
Yeah, it's on a conceptual level. It's very fascinating to me because, you know, historically we've been dependent on Texas's grid and ERCOT and everything. And with the storms that have happened over the past few years, it's like, you know, people who have the means have been able to have their own generators and install solar panels. And so it seems like this approach is more of an equitable community-based kind of right in between those two. You know what I mean? Like not as big as the state of Texas, not as expensive as you're personally installing these solar panels and buying your own generator, right? So did I kind of explain that right? Like this is this kind of more equitable way to provide energy security in this time?
Yeah, absolutely. To Ed's point, at the heart of Intergrid really is equity. In fact, you know, we've kind of created this tagline to say that our mission is to provide equity through energy resiliency. And as Ed was discussing, the LMI communities and communities of color are really already energy insecure. They carry a very heavy energy burden as it is, and access to power resiliency or backup power, if you will, is a premium they can not afford. So we are taking on that challenge. How do you make access to energy resiliency equitable, affordable, reliable, and clean at the same time? If you consider just a couple of data points, LMI communities in Texas use about an average of 10% of their income on energy costs. On average, their energy costs are 3 to 10 times higher than non-low income households. So what we want to do at Intergrid, as we've conceptualized, is to convert this sort of commercial microgrid model for LMI and under-resourced residential communities, as Ed was discussing. You know, that entails not only just optimizing the right mix of distributed energy resource technologies, but really it calls for business model innovation, as I was referring to earlier, and also novel financing structures. P4, as I say, you know, public, private, philanthropic partnerships, I think, are key to delivering resiliency that's again affordable and you know, financially viable. So, you know, as a business, you know, mission-driven business or social enterprise, I think we can do that as compared to, say, a purely for-profit corporation, right? We can obtain public and philanthropic grants, concessional or donated equipment, and leverage even you know, in-kind partnerships as we already are. So that, I think, enables us to deliver this in a way that perhaps other players in this space can't alone do it. It's all about partnerships. You know, we want to certainly collaborate, and we are doing just that with a number of stakeholders that we'll talk about.
And another reason why this is a timely topic is we're dealing with massive inflation right now. Costs are going up, especially in food and energy. And if you look at energy, even prior to this time of inflation, electricity prices in the U.S. were expected to increase, across the board. And for every 10% increase in home energy costs, 840,000 Americans are pushed below the poverty line. So hundreds of thousands of people right now today are being pushed below the poverty line because of this increase in energy costs. And so we need to be more creative in how we upgrade our infrastructure, and especially how it serves those low and middle income communities. One of the opportunities that's out there is the Justice 40 initiative, which was launched during President Biden's first week in office through one of his executive orders. And that directs 40% of the overall benefits of certain federal investments to disadvantaged communities, which include low-income communities of color. And that includes clean energy and energy efficiency spending by the federal government, as well as spending on training and workforce development. And all of those can contribute to developing microgrid technology in our cities. And so we want to make sure that we're looking at these opportunities coming out of the Department of Energy and how we can benefit from that Justice 40 initiative.
Absolutely. As a callback to the need for these partnerships, one partnership that you'll have recently gotten into is through the ION Smart and Resilient Cities Accelerator, which you are a current cohort member. So tell me a little bit about that opportunity. You know, what are some goals and how is it going to be a part of that initiative?
So I'll kind of start us off. You know, it was important to me that the technology and the innovation that's coming out of the ION is used to benefit the disadvantaged and under-resourced and disinvested communities around it. So, you know, you have this innovation district on the outskirts of Third Ward, and there was a lot of community concern about how the district would change the neighborhood and the land prices and gentrification and things like that. And, you know, to their credit, you know, Rice Management Company worked with the mayor to develop an agreement that outlines certain benefits to the community. And I'm glad that Intergrid was able to be part of an accelerator to design something that would actually save costs to Third Ward residents through the implementation of the microgrid. It was a great opportunity to meet other startups and kind of share our challenges and opportunities with each other, as well as to hear from mentors through SCORE Houston and through kind of more advanced companies at the ION and benefit from their knowledge.
Yeah, I would add that we were just immensely grateful for the opportunity to join the ION. It is, as we all know, the anchor of our innovation district corridor. I think it provided us very timely validation, if you will, and exposure. One of the key partners that we're looking to work with is Rice Management Company. And so having been chosen to participate in this particular accelerator, I think brought us closer to having some of those discussions with RMC. But, you know, as Ed was sort of pointing to the LMI communities, the Third Ward specifically in this sort of ION district footprint, they, for example, have a 47% chance of experiencing an outage compared to, say, 11% in non-minority areas of Houston. So I think it's really important that if we talk about equity and access to opportunities, energy is really fundamental to that, right? And if those communities cannot rely upon having access to energy, particularly when there are outages and extreme weather events, when access to energy is most needed, then I think it's an opportunity that we need to really seize. So that's kind of what we're hoping to do, having participated now in the ION, is to open up some of those collaborative discussions with the community as well as stakeholders of the RMC and the ION district.
Yeah, so I know InnoGrid is or has identified the innovation corridor, which in Houston kind of spans from the Texas Medical Center to downtown. And obviously the ION and the surrounding, the innovation corridor includes that Midtown area. So why that area? I know you've touched on it a little bit, but why are y'all excited about this area? And what's the status of making that happen?
Yeah, I think it's an ideal venue to host a microgrid test bed, right? So if I can backtrack a little bit, you know, our aims are kind of twofold. And this is integrated is also sort of a first in on two different levels for Houston, right? So initially, we want to establish the integrid as really the first microgrid test bed, working laboratory, if you will, for distributed energy resource technologies and innovators. So say folks at the Greentown Labs, if they've got technologies in battery storage or on-site power generation, there's really today no real live dynamic environment where they can, you know, plug in, pilot, and prove their technologies. And that's where I think we can provide that sort of a service that's essential. But secondly, that sort of test bed can become this sort of a microgrid design, development, and deployment platform, right? So we can go out into the communities and really get a better sense of what their actual needs are and design microgrids that are fit for purpose, right? That are place-based, if you will, in terms of the innovation and combination of technologies as well as the business model. So I think it's fully appropriate to anchor it at Greentown Labs as we're aiming to do, and then to pull in the ION and expand from there.
I think, you know, also if you look at this innovation corridor, it also forms the spine of the city. You have so many important municipal buildings in downtown and midtown, so many important first responding organizations, police stations, and fire, and you have a large amount of affordable housing in the area. You know, there's critical resources here that we want to make sure the lights stay on when there's a power outage. And we know that Houston is prone to natural disasters, and our hurricanes and our flooding are getting worse. And, you know, one of the things that we believe at Integrid is that where you live shouldn't determine whether you survive a natural weather event. We want to make sure that we provide energy stability in the communities that need it most. We want to make sure that our critical first responder infrastructure is stable during and after disaster, but also that our most vulnerable residents in the LMI communities, that their power also stays on and could be islanded from the larger grid in a disaster. So we thought for those reasons, you know, the innovation corridor is really ideal. And this really meets the city's goals in the complete communities action plans, which are prioritizing the vulnerable communities in the climate action plan, in the resilient Houston plan. And so this is really a realization of all of that planning that the city's been doing.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that I think Integrid was quite ahead of the curve when we first conceptualized this. Back in 2020, because only recently has the city of Houston announced this new resilient now framework, right? Which is a partnership between the city of Houston and CenterPoint, and specifically their goal is to provide energy resiliency, especially to some of the communities that we've been discussing. So, you know, we've had some, again, fruitful discussions as to how we can plug in and collaborate and provide a solution as part of that resilient now framework. And microgrids is certainly featuring, I think, very highly in some of you know, those discussions.
So one of the things we talked about a little earlier on is just that, you know, microgrids, the technology has been around, but it's been slow to adapt, at least here in the United States and the Houston area specifically. Why the slow pace in adoption for, you know, Houstonians and for this area? And how are y'all addressing that challenge? Because I'm sure there's still challenges to, you know, telling people about a microgrid situation and explaining both the technology and the potential impact on the community.
Right. Yeah. I think our key challenge is having site access, as they say. So in order to situate, locate, you know, generation assets, battery storage assets, at the site of consumption, not just the production. You need to have access to those sites. So if we're looking at, for example, Greentown Labs, that building is on about 7-year lease through RMC. So for that to make sense, we would have to really be the ones to come up with the resources to make that viable, right? If we're looking at a city site, let's say the rooftop of the George Brown Convention Center, Schneider Electric, one of our pro bono partners, has run some modeling to show us the potential of how much energy we can produce and the revenue it can generate to channel for social impact to the LMI communities. We would need access to that rooftop, right? And that means the city of Houston and the other parties that have purview over and control over those sites need to enter into, some kind of an agreement arrangement with Intergrid. So those are some of the fundamental challenges we face. The other really is the funding, right? And, there's plenty of funding coming down the pike from DC. The administration has allocated a great deal of new funding for distributed energy resources, including microgrids, demonstration projects. We've already defined in this discussion so far the need, why we should be doing this in Houston. And we're the energy capital of the world. We are focused, I think rightly so, on the transition where it comes to oil and gas and hydrocarbons. But I think there is a bit of an oversight in terms of how do you transition also the power sector, right? How you reimagine, how we are going to deliver energy in an increasingly challenging environment. And so I think it makes a great deal of sense to me that we seriously look at microgrids as that delivery solution.
I think we also have policy challenges. Right now, we don't really have a transactional energy landscape in Texas where homeowners, if they have solar panels and storage at their homes, can sell back the excess energy that they generate to the utilities. And that is something that's being discussed. Among others, Elon Musk and Tesla are lobbying the state government to look at how we can allow some forms of transactional energy generation and sale. But those are things that we need to look at to make a beneficial policy environment for microgrids to take hold and for especially the households to benefit from that energy production that they might be doing on site.
Yeah, definitely. The regulations need to catch up. Transactive energy, as Ed was talking about, is something that's novel and something that we are trying to marshal with Intergrid. So we are working with Power Ledger. They are pioneers in peer-to-peer transactive energy trading based out of Perth, Australia. So they are certainly keen on entering the Texas market and have in principle said that they would like to do so with Intergrid, right? So, that platform would, enable participation in energy market services, grid services. And as Ed was pointing out, that enables residential householders to earn credits, create basically a value stream for providing services like peak shaving, demand response, load shedding, and selling back, power generated on site to the grid. Think of community microgrids as the shared economy for grid resiliency, right? That's kind of another way of just simply putting it more in a more simpler, terms that the average person can probably relate to. So why is there not this capability to do peer-to-peer trading in this age of a shared economy, right?
Yeah, I think it's totally a chicken or the egg situation, like what comes first. And unfortunately, that just has led to inaction over the years. Because, it's massive infrastructure realigning a massive part of our infrastructure. And I feel like it's like a, you do it, no, you do it. And it's like, who's going to spend the money to actually do it? And also change mentality around energy. Like I said, we've just all been used to blaming ERCOT for anything. And it's like, well, when there's an actual thing you can maybe do to change, it's a little bit difficult to convince people, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if I can kind of go a bit, higher to the macro kind of big picturing, you know, this transition to a net zero energy future, or the energy renaissance, as I like to call it, needs to happen at the scale of the industrial revolution, at the speed of the digital IT revolution, and at an unprecedented level of capital investment, right? And so all of this, by the way, needs to happen in a way that is just, inclusive, equitable, and sustainable. So, you know, it's a pretty big challenge to balance all of those priorities. And that's where I think you have to reimagine, you know, not just the technology, but the business models. You know, we often talk about systemic transformations of our energy system. We seek out, you know, breakthrough technologies through innovation, but we really don't focus too much on social innovation. You know, and at the end of the day, we have to create solutions that can be readily adopted as well by consumers. You know, the IEA roadmap to net zero by 2050 says that 55% of the emissions reductions we need to reach net zero by 2050 are tied to consumer choices, right? Consumer decisions. And so it's, I think, really important that we look at solutions that put consumers in that driver's seat, if you will, provide them that sort of empowerment and control, as in the case of microgrids.
So boiling it down to what you're focused on now with Integrid, what's kind of top of priority for you? You know, you have the Smart and Resilient Cities Accelerator kind of under your belt. What's next for, you know, growing partnerships, potentially, you know, access to funding? What are your priorities?
I think our key priorities are to formalize some of these partnerships that we have, informally engaged in, right? So we've had, again, some very constructive conversations with the City of Houston, the city's innovation office, as well as their sustainability and resiliency office, Priya Zachariah there, as well as Jesse Bounds. They've all been very supportive, encouraging. So our next step really is to define what a collaborative public-private partnership would look like, as we've conceptualized with Integrid. Secondly, we want to grow our team. We definitely need more folks to help us execute on this vision. And so anyone that has kind of a, you know, background, whether it's in distributed energy resources or just even project management, we'd love to talk to them. Funding, obviously, we've talked about, that's key. But from there, I think we want to go out to the communities and really understand what their true needs are, to create the awareness of what a microgrid can do for their communities, and how we can then better tailor the solution that we ultimately create, you know, in terms of the design of a microgrid.
I think, you know, public awareness is also important, and it's on us to kind of educate and to create that awareness of this potential solution to some of our energy issues. So that's partly why I'm getting involved with the work I'm doing with the Bullard Center at Texas Southern University. We're working with communities like Sunnyside that are implementing the Sunnyside Solar Farm. We're working with a lot of these energy and environmental justice communities in Houston and educating them about energy democracy and how they can take more control over their energy costs and understanding what goes into that bill that they get from their electricity. And, you know, also just looking at all of the major developments, Houston's a growing city. I mean, we have major developments that are starting from a clean slate. If you look at the East River Project, or if you look at the Innovation District just a few years ago, also looking at the redevelopment of CUNY Homes, that entire complex is going to be rebuilt from the ground up. We need to partner with these developments and these developers in an early stage to make sure they're thinking about energy resiliency, energy generation, energy storage at an early stage in the development of those projects.
Yeah, taking that point, you know, further, every new affordable housing project should also be sustainable, and it should also be resilient, right? So it's great that I see these new projects, affordable housing projects rather, coming up that are implementing energy efficiency standards, you know, better insulation, weatherization, what have you. But I would argue that they should come with a built-in community microgrid, right? Each new housing unit should really have a pre-installed, say, smart thermostat and a cost-efficient modular battery-powered generator that can be tied to the microgrid and that can also enable them to participate in grid services. But again, you know, certain regulations need to catch up for that to be enabled. But I think we need to kind of go back and rethink what we mean when we say, you know, affordable housing, because if you can help reduce dependency on high energy costs, that is also making that housing project more affordable, right? So kind of go a little more upstream beyond just energy efficiency to really where that energy is coming from and how it can be better utilized.
Now, you know, going off of, you know, this big picture idea, let's say in a few years, Intergrid has, you know, latched onto the Innovation District and gotten to deploy that technology to the entire community. Where do you see the business going longer term? Like, what are your all's hopes that you can really create in Houston and beyond?
Our big ambition really is to make Houston a microgrid innovation hub, right? We're seeing a lot of, I think, very viable, ambitious concepts of, say, the hydrogen hub by the Center for the Future of Houston, a CCUS hub. And in microgrids, I think, and distributed energy resources more broadly should be, I think, a key priority for the energy cap of the world to make a centerpiece of it as part of our aim to lead the global energy transition.
I should add that Paresh and I are both very much involved with LMI communities overseas. I'm a returned Peace Corps volunteer. I have a diplomatic role with the country of Lesotho, and Lesotho itself is an island within a country. And so microgrid technology, or as they call it in Africa, mini grid technology, is high on their priorities to develop. And so once we can create this and test this modular approach to microgrid development here in Houston, we can deploy it worldwide.
I love that. I love the idea of Houston being a microgrid hub too, because like you mentioned, there are several hubs kind of like on the rise here in Houston, and why not throw another one into the race? I love Houston being the hub for everything.
Definitely.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Paresh and Ed, thank you so much for talking with me today. It's very exciting to see what's going on with InnoGrid. The whole story is really fascinating, and I think Houston's cheering you on for sure. Can't wait to see what else y'all do. So thanks again for your time today.
Thanks for having us, Natalie.
Yep, thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.